Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, October 12th. Hello again, Orion Samuelson, along with Max Armstrong, here for our weekly visit. And what a week it was on Wall Street. The stock market really took a drubbing, and then today came back to recover some of the loss that we experienced early in the week. So let's take a look at how we ended this week of turbulence on Wall Street. The S&P 500 snapped a six-day losing streak today, thanks to technology stocks recovering after a week of losses and investors beginning to do some bargain hunting, shopping for bargain stocks ahead of the third quarter earnings report season, which really got started today with some of the big banks reporting their earnings for the third quarter. The hard-hit S&P 500 energy and financial sectors managed to close the session with slight gains after a late afternoon rally. And Janice Sampson, co-chief investment officer at Oakbrook Investments in Lyle, Illinois, said, "People are starting to buy in, thinking the higher-flying growth stocks were oversold. They wanted to get in before next week, when the earnings really start coming. But until the U.S. and China reach a trade deal, the rebound in the stock market could be vulnerable, and investors recognize that. They're anxious about the impact of tariffs on corporate stocks." The analyst said, "If earnings come out good, I think this rally is sustainable if we don't get negative trade news." And trade news, of course, is the wild card. That is the big if. So the Dow Industrial Average up 287 points for the day, closing the day and the week at 25,340. The S&P 500 gained 38 points to end the week at 2767, and the NASDAQ Composite added 168 points to end the week at 7497. The technology sector's biggest boosts were Apple and Microsoft, which went up more than 3%. Visa and MasterCard both climbed almost 5%, boosted by strong credit card sales included in bank earnings reports. And the S&P 500's financial sector ended the day up a tenth of a percent. PNC Financial led the percentage losers among bank stocks today with a drop of 5.6% after the regional bank reported disappointing quarterly loan profit. But J.P. Morgan Chase & Company closed down 1% despite reporting a quarterly profit that beat expectations. The three gainers among banks today included Citigroup, up 2%, and Wells Fargo, which managed a 1.3% gain. Netflix and Amazon, some of the names that took a big hit in the week sell-off, rose 5.7% for Netflix and 4% for Amazon. And the bank results launched the quarterly report season that will give the clearest picture yet of the impact on profits from President Trump's trade war with China. And so as we look ahead to a heavy trading week and earnings reports next week, the earnings of S&P 500 companies are estimated now to have risen 21.5% in the third quarter, and we'll see how close that gets as we get the report starting next week. Goldman Sachs Group will report results from the third quarter on Tuesday. And under the leadership of Lloyd Blankfein, whose tenure as CEO was slated to end on September 30th, the conference call with analysts will give incoming CEO David Solomon an opportunity to begin publicly making his mark on the company or choose to leave all the talking to his financial officer. A raft of Dow 30 companies will report next week. Names like Johnson & Johnson, United Health Group, Procter & Gamble Company, IBM, Travelers Companies, and American Express Company. Johnson & Johnson expected to report a higher third quarter profit. United Health Group will report third quarter earnings, and they'll be watching the health industry on that one. And then on reports, the Federal Reserve next week will release industrial production data. That'll happen on Tuesday. And according to a Reuters survey of economists, production likely rose just 0.2% in September. That would be lower than its August reading when it reached 0.4%. That number went up 0.4%. And the NAHB Housing Market Index, also due on Tuesday. Wednesday, housing starts forecast to have gone down in a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1,228,000 units in September. And again, the Federal Reserve Board governors will be on the speaking circuit next week, making appearances at various economic meetings across the country. Back to the earnings report, Honeywell International will report. Schlumberger, and Schlumberger expected to post an increase in their third quarter profit on Friday. And markets will turn to BlackRock's third quarter results on Tuesday as it offers a peek into investor sentiment after the volatile quarter that featured a wide gap in performance between booming U.S. stocks and flatlining international stocks, as well as continued pressure on bonds. Abbott Laboratories will be reporting next week. Domino's Pizza expected to report an increase in third quarter sales as it benefits from its digital investments in digital delivery services such as Domino's Hotspots. And then a look at the airline industry on Tuesday when United Airlines reports its third quarter profit. Looking at the oil market, the U.S. oil drilling rig count rose this week for the first time in 4 weeks, boosting the number of rigs in the nation's biggest oil field to the most in nearly 4 years. And despite the shutting down in the Gulf of several of those wells, the oil market seemed to handle it, and oil producers seemed to be getting back into production in some of the wells that were shut down. But all in all, it's going to be a busy week again, and eyes on Sears because they apparently are late or delaying at least payments to some vendors, and that adds to concern about its future. After earlier in the week, we were told that they were getting ready to file for bankruptcy. Well, we'll take a look at what happened agriculturally because there was also a report of interest this week from the USDA, and I'll be talking to Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group when we continue on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group joins us in the studio this week. We had a major report, the October report, and my first question is, you know, any surprises?
No, none really. They didn't raise the yield probably as much as a lot of people thought, and that was kind of a bullish slant, or it was a false positive perhaps or something. Still a lot of corn, still a lot of beans, and maybe depending on the weather in North Dakota and South Dakota, where they lose many up there due to the weather, That may still increase a little bit down the road, but pretty sublime, except for, once again, the feed grain usage for corn did not increase it. They decreased it again, and I want to read the WASDE report just to see what their rationale is behind it, because if anybody has never read the WASDE report, it's good to read their rationale in the end as to how they come up with certain things, and it explains the protocol they use and eliminates some questions a person has in his mind, so he gets a better handle on just how they got there from here, you know.
Because we do have more hogs, yeah. And we do have more cattle.
Yeah, yes, we had, and unless something's wrong with the numbers, you know, and that would be good news if we had less, we come to find out, but I don't know when they reconcile that fact. I think usually at the end of September, when they have the final September 1 stocks report that determines the year-end carryout, that's when they can massage things to come up with some deficiencies. It's kind of like balancing your checkbook, you know, at the end of the year and saying, well, oh, so this is where the money went or it didn't go. And they didn't do it this time. They came up with more. We had 138 million more stocks in the September report than we thought that we'd have.
Any numbers that would affect livestock producers like cattle and hog producers?
Gosh, you know, this whole thing, when you look at our economy that's been rip-roaring really for 8 years and then accelerated when Trump got in office, there's nothing in there that slows it down that you can blame on agriculture. We've had cheap food for 10 years now, really, and I recall back when we were getting crucified pretty much for burning corn for ethanol and people were starving, you know, and that's nobody talks about that anymore. So there's a lot you can do with $3.50 cash corn or $3 corn where we happen to be. If you're in the northern plains, it's worse. So there really isn't that isn't a detriment to making money in livestock. So it should be pretty decent for the livestock person.
President Trump's announcement that he's going to start work on getting E15 the mm-hmm. year round, mm-hmm. significant for corn growers?
Well, it doesn't hurt. We need all the help we can get, and that this is the thing that we are not doing. We're not curbing demand by these cheap prices. We may be reorganizing some things, but the whole world is really going well. You don't hear about a Greece crisis again, or there's some of the talk in Europe slowing down a little bit from a good economy and backing off a little, which you'd expect. So really, we need to use more ethanol, and that's going to help. It's going to take time to get the process, I think, in line with where we have E15 filling stations, but if you want to use it, you can. You know, it's not that easy, but if you get online, and all farmers ought to do that. You know, we ought to all burn E85, and I filled my tank yesterday on the way into Chicago from the farm, and I paid $1 a gallon less than regular E10. And that works. I don't care what the inefficiencies are. You know, if they're 20%, that's like paying $2.20 or $2.40 for gasoline versus almost $3.80, and I'm still saving 40 cents a gallon. So we need to. Farmers ought to do 100% E85, let alone E15. You know.
And I don't know about you, but I get very tired of the, well, I call it false information,
right,
used by the American Petroleum Institute. They're still using arguments that we've disproved.
Well, it's amazing the leverage they have with any administration, it seems like, and this one is no exception, because we got $75 oil, you know, and Harold Hamm feels pretty good about that in North Dakota and in Texas, so they've gotten their due, and a lot of farmers feel like we've been kind of not sold down the river, but we kind of got hurt a little bit with this RINs deal, and now some of these small ethanol plants getting out from under having to make ethanol. I think that cost us some bushels. I've heard as much as $200 or $300 million that we lost because they didn't have to produce ethanol, and now we're going to get that back a little bit. But the amount, as I understand, is like maybe 80 or 90 million bushels of corn or gallons, I believe it is, we're going to use. So it helps. It doesn't hurt. But I think the real kicker is in our export market. And you know, if you remember back when China gave us this offer for $60 billion, and they were going to buy more ethanol, more DDGs, and more natural gas, and we said no, we want $300 billion. That would have helped a lot, an awful lot. And I think if they look back at it, I think every one of the negotiators would have liked to have that one back and said, okay, let's set aside agriculture. We've got it now. Now let's work on our technological problems, and that could take years to resolve. And we missed an opportunity there, I think, and we're going going to pay for that for some time.
You farm in North Dakota, on the border with Canada.
Yeah.
Is there a shooting war between Canada and the U.S. for the dairy farmers yet?
No, not yet. But, but you know, that's going to take a while, too.
Yeah.
It's going to take maybe it will be a year before we see the really the benefits of it, because it's got to go through Congress. But no, we have Gulkey Group has some clients that, that farm on both sides of the border. So we all get along and we all understand each other. But, you know, they have some benefits that we haven't been able to partake in for some time. And, of course, they can bring spring wheat into Minneapolis as a delivery point now, which is kind of difficult for us to go that other direction. But and they've become a competitor of ours probably in soybeans. They raised a lot of soybeans the last 2 years, and that whole border has gone further and further north, you know, over the years.
Finally, on trade issues, NAFTA is gone, but we have, I don't know how to pronounce it,
so
NAFTA
either,
was easy,
right.
But we have another agreement still to be ratified, ready to go, and generally speaking, good news for grain farmers?
Yeah, I don't think we got hurt any, but it took a while to get us back to where we were originally, really. It was really the, and as one person once told me, there are a lot more people that are going to, that are factory workers that are going to vote for in an election than what may not vote as farmers because they didn't get what they needed. So I think this was all about jobs, and you create more jobs making a car than you do selling another 100 million bushels of corn or beans. And it was all about politics in this one. But certainly the dairymen, they needed it, and this helps. You know, 3.5% or whatever of a big number is still a pretty good deal for us. But it'll take time. It certainly wasn't a step backwards.
And one thing I have to talk about, because I've been saying for a long time, the Mississippi River is quite a weather changer. And when you looked at the latest weekly harvest progress report, Illinois on the east side of the river harvested 63% of its corn crop. Iowa on the western side, 18%. Soybeans, Illinois harvested 51%, and Iowa only 18%.
Yeah.
That division makes quite a difference,
well,
doesn't it?
I've got friends and clients in the northwestern part of Iowa that have not started soybeans yet, and these are 10,000, 5,000 acre farmers that went after corn and the beans were wet, and it just kept raining and raining, and kind of like we suffered in northern Illinois. If you look at the weather maps, which you do every week, there's that vein that comes over the top of Iowa and comes right over Rockford this year. We've had 7 inches of rain this last week, and we had two other bouts of 7 inches of rain, and it did affect my soybeans on heavy untiled ground, heavy clay ground. They were not what I had hoped they would be, but better than normal, but still not that I don't see any of the 80, 90 bushel stuff that we hear about in the South, you know.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I have heard 100 bushel per acre soybeans.
Yeah, that was a test plot years ago in northern Illinois, and I thought, I wonder if I'd live long enough to see it. Well, we made it.
I guess we did. Well, Jerry, thank you for taking time to visit with us, and successful harvest for you in North Dakota.
Thank you.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence. For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Before we look at some of the agricultural numbers that go beyond what we talked about with Jerry Gulkey, we're going to say hello to an incoming president, the president-elect of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Jennifer Houston. I talked to her at that cattlemen's event in Arizona a couple of weeks ago and asked her to talk about her cattle operation.
Okay, my husband and I own a family-owned livestock auction market in Sweetwater, Tennessee. We also stock our cattle. We feed a lot of cattle. We do some heifer development, because when you're in the market business, you're pretty much in all of the cattle business at different times.
And how many auctions a year?
We sell about 75 days a year. We have one weekly sale, and then about 26 times a year we have an extra sale on Fridays.
And you told me that you do have some specialty sales. What is the most unique sale maybe that you have?
Probably the most unique sale that we have are our whole graded Holstein steer sales. They're modeled after our graded feeder calf sales in that the cattle are brought in on sale day. They're weighed. The state grades them according to feeder calf grades, and the Holsteins are slightly modified grade. Puts them in pens of like kind, and we sell them basically in tractor trailer load lots. When we can, if not in large groups, so that every small farmer gets the pen price for his animal, whether he has one, five, or 50.
And family involved?
Mark's dad was involved until his death. My children, one is a lobbyist with the American Seed Trade Association in D.C., so ag policy is in her blood also. And my son is just started his doctorate, finished his master's in biosystems engineering at the University of Tennessee.
You have some bright young people in the family.
I hope so.
So let's look ahead to the end of January when you will no longer be president-elect, you will be president. What are some of the items on your agenda?
Well, I want to continue this strong state and national partnership, and we're here at the Yavapai County Cattlemen's Cattle Growers Association, and they really epitomize what makes NCBA so great, that our county associations and what they started back in 1932 of contributing to the national association through our state associations all the way up to national. We're truly a grassroots organization that values the opinions of every one of our members, whether in the high desert of Arizona or back in the hills and valleys of Tennessee.
The trade situation has been on the topic at every farm organization. How basic is it to your organization, your concern over the trade issues?
Well, trade is of top priority for us. Tariffs might not be what we would have chosen, but we do support the president as he tries to get past our non-scientific, non-tariff trade barriers. Problems we've had with the EU and China through the years, whether it's talking about technology that we use that we think have been artificial trade barriers through the years. So if we can get rid of some of those, it'll reap benefits for all cattle producers.
Jeanette Houston, the president-elect of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. She will take office at the end of January at the annual meeting of the NCBA. And it's kind of interesting that in the month of January, we have annual conventions of two major farm organizations. And they're both being held in New Orleans. Not at the same time. Early in the month, the American Farm Bureau Federation will go to New Orleans for its annual convention. And then starting the last day of the month, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association will hold its convention in New Orleans. So New Orleans is the agricultural convention center, at least for the first month of 2019. We are still trying to value all of the damage done by Hurricane Michael following Hurricane Florence. And the Director of Agriculture for Georgia is commenting on the destruction to crops and buildings and farming operations there. The Commissioner Gary Black said, "Hurricane Michael's impact has been the most widespread and devastating hurricane in recollection to impact Georgia's agriculture industry." He said, "Crops, animals, and infrastructure have taken a substantial loss." And he concluded by saying, "We are thankful for the safety of our farmers and families in South Georgia. Power and products can be restored, but human lives cannot." And Tom Windhausen of Mitchell County, Georgia, a cotton farmer, says he has seen more cotton left in the field after he picked than what is left now after the hurricane rains came through. And while we've been seeing all of the devastation in urban areas, we sometimes forget or overlook the damage it does in rural areas. Winds of 120 miles an hour in Georgia destroyed vulnerable cotton, peanuts, pecans, and vegetable crops, in addition to significant property damage. And he said early reports indicate damage to aerial applicator aircraft hangars, to chicken houses, cotton gins, and, of course, homes on farms in Georgia. But that's just one other state that was impacted by the wrath of Hurricane Florence and Hurricane Michael. Begin to wonder when this hurricane season is going to end. It should be pretty soon. Another development this week, the Monsanto unit owned by Bayer will get a new trial on the $250 million in punitive damages awarded by a jury to a groundskeeper who alleged the company's glyphosate-based weed killers, including Roundup, gave him cancer. But there'll be a new trial, at least on the punitive damage part of it. San Francisco's Superior Court of California Judge Suzanne Bolanos granted Monsanto's motion for a new trial on punitive damages. But again, I have to wonder where we're going on this lawsuit dollar value that we're beginning to see, particularly impacting agriculture, because a jury... Well, first of all, let me say the value of life is, well, you can't come up with a value on life, really. But on August 10th, a jury in San Francisco found Monsanto failed to warn school groundskeeper Dwayne Johnson and other consumers of the cancer risks posed by its weed killers. It awarded $39 million in compensatory damage, but get this, $250 million in punitive damages. It's a tough one to figure out, but I guess it's for real. So let's take a look at where we're going to start trading in the markets on Monday when we once again start. Let's hope that Wall Street settles down a little bit. But in the grain market on Monday, the December wheat will start at 517 and a quarter after gaining 9¾ cents a bushel today. December corn will start at 373 and three quarters after gaining 4 cents today. And November soybeans will start Monday's trade at 867 and a half after gaining 9¼ cents a bushel today. And then what about livestock? Well, the cattle market got hit a little bit today. The October live cattle will start trading on Monday at $112.37 a hundredweight, dropped 25 cents today. October feeder cattle will start at $154.65 after dropping $2.07 a hundredweight today. And February lean hogs will start at $62.22 after losing 27 cents a hundredweight today. Well, it has happened again. We're out of time. And my thanks to you for joining us every week here on The Markets. The Markets sponsored by the CME Group.